Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners listening to this podcast much, much, much later after we've aired it and probably had our wonderful guest on more than once, perhaps twice, perhaps thrice. But however you've decided to spend this hour with us, we're very, very glad to have you. One of the things that we grow up thinking about, perhaps we think about fairy tales a lot, about falling in love, being connected to somebody that we love and they love us back, and sometimes happily ever after. But what is happily ever after? What is conscious monogamy? And how can we explore that, as well as what is non-sexual polyamory? Well, those are some questions that you're going to find out during this hour and much, much more. I've got an amazing guest on. His name is James Priestley, which I'm very excited. He's from Urban Life Counseling and Body Work. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
So that's just, if we could frame the show, what is conscious monogamy? Let's just start with that.
In some ways, it's basically just bringing to our conscious awareness what you're actually committing to, or what your ideals are with any kind of monogamous relationship you're wanting to create with your lover.
And that makes sense, because that was one of the things when we were having our awesome pre-show chat as well, which I'd love to share with our listeners, which is when we fall in love or we connect with somebody, there is no rule book other than perhaps not to have sex with other people depending on what you choose for the relationship. And sometimes I've wondered about that, just when you compare, say, like a relationship that is focused more on, say, BDSM, which one of the things I've always liked about that is the fact that people talk about things, sometimes say, okay, here's a code word, this is okay, this means, this is the code word for stop, these things are okay, these things I'm not okay with, and they actually discuss that at length, where sometimes I think in other relationships we don't explore, we don't set boundaries. And we think when we fall in love with somebody that all that stuff's just going to fall into place magically, just like Cinderella.
Yeah.
But we don't hear about how Cinderella's Happily Ever After happened. There is not a sequel to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you gave a great example with BDSM community in regards to there's so many details people will flesh out in terms of their desires, their interests, their fears. Their cautions on things, and they're in a sense they're in a way they could be a great role model for monogamous in the sense that there's so many different ways where regardless of what your monogamous commitment is and your intentions or the vows you make if you get married for the rest of your life more and more research and different psychologists and various recent books that are coming out, they're all converging on the same point. We're going to be attracted to other people for the rest of our life, in varying degrees of not just sexual attraction or physical attraction. There's just, you could be even straight, and it could be someone of the same sex with you. We're such incredibly social creatures, and we're going to be drawn to people for the rest of our life, just for different energies, different personalities, different kind of archetype energies people represent. And unfortunately, the mass majority of people that commit to monogamy, there's no real rule book whatsoever given on how you manage those attractions.
No.
And instead, it's, for the most part, kind of shoved down. At least as one of the strategies about, okay, I'm not going to mention people I'm attracted to. I'm not going to mention this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to upset the relationship.
And of course, by swallowing stuff, it just sometimes manifests. It's almost like having a pimple and not taking care of it. And eventually it's going to rise and pop and kind of be pussy and kind of gross if things aren't discussed. And that doesn't mean that every relationship is going to manifest into affairs, etc. but by having conversations and being able to create safe space to have those conversations and discuss what I love what you call conscious monogamy, where we do have the rules, like what is okay, what's not okay, and figuring out how open or how close do we want the relationship to be.
Yeah, and even another word you could to go with us is the idea of whether you call it conscious monogamy or monogamy 2.0.
I love monogamy 2.0. It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Is the notion of and whether it's a closed relationship or an open one, the common framework is the idea of it's called customizing it. Because if you make your relationship more conscious to you, you know what your fears are, what your attractions are in life, even just what your passions are, whether it's sexual or just other passions. Like someone could have a passion for whatever, swing dancing or something like that. The other person could be completely too left feet. It's the same. There's not going to be any one common version of it. That all the relationships, the ones that thrive and work long term, and they're continually reignited or
rekindled.
Yeah, all those words, rejuvenated, rekindled. It's come from those two personalities, those two people, customizing it, trying to make it fit for their relationship. So the ideal version of what you call, say, monogamy 2.0 is going to be a completely, there'll be overlaps, obviously, but there'll be a completely unique mix for each couple.
Now, that makes sense, and I had an older lady on the show one time who, she wouldn't give me her exact age, but I do believe she was in her late 70s, possibly 80s, and she had been with her partner since she was 12 years old,
wow,
where they went ice skating when they were in grade 6. And one of the things she said was, even though they've been together and they've had a close relationship, one of the things she pointed out, which I thought was a really valid point, when I asked her, how do you stay in love with somebody for a really long time? She said, well, she's dated hundreds of men over the time that they've been together because her husband has evolved into man after man after man. And considering she knew him since she was 12, it makes sense. And she pointed out that the big thing is not to hang on to what somebody's like now, but to allow them to change. And to allow yourself to fall in love with them over and over and over again.
Yeah, the words that jump out to me when you're saying that is allowing them to change or being open to that change.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of I don't know if you've touched on it in past shows, but the idea of basically any relationships to grow and thrive. This could be with your lover, it could be with your kids, it could... You could even technically, you know, apply it to it in a workplace, but primarily focusing on the lovers category. Any solid relationship that thrives and is rekindled, it's a mixture between these two opposite things we so want, which is one at one end you crave growth and change and some openness to venturing or, you know, risk or unknown, but then that so needs to be balanced with the opposite of that, of we crave some stability, some constancy. And it sounds like that couple from age 12 onwards?
Yeah, age 12 onwards till 80s, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever way they were doing it, they were obviously doing some balancing of allowing growth and change to happen so she could have these different lovers that would evolve. And one of the things that would go with that, though, it would be... it's not a perfect mix. You're going to be pulled at different times to either direction. Meaning, she's probably had to take hundreds of little moments of taking a breath and just trusting. If all of a sudden he wants to start doing rock climbing, or he all of a sudden wants to start doing whatever, swing dancing, and maybe she's not the dancer or something, for example, or maybe she does, or he wants her to come out to try it, even if she's, you know, frightful of it. It's all these little acts of trust that he can take up rock climbing, or he can take up swing dancing, or they can take up swing dancing, and they'll manage it. Whether he's a 9 out of 10 for passion for it, and whether she ends up loving it or she doesn't love it, does that make sense? It's these little acts of faith.
And I think that can be really scary because even though change is the only thing I think in life that at least I've experienced in my life that's constant,
yeah,
it's still really freaky and it freaks all of us out because the other thing we crave, I think, in relationships, even though we hate bed, death, and the plainness of things, but we also crave that security, and maybe that's not the best word, but almost like safety, where it's that wonderful content, sweetness, and yet at the same time, there's that other part that we just crave, that excitement, the almost what I call the honeymoon period, where you get to meet that person, you just get that initial attraction and connect, and everything about them excites you. And sometimes it makes us, I know for myself, my own experience, almost want to be better because I want them to see me in that light, because I love the way I look when I look in their eyes and I see myself reflected back. And that person, the way they look at me that way, is I want them to look at me like that forever. So I try and work really hard at myself. So I'm always in the best lights, whether or not it's personal self-care, whether it's working out in the gym, making sure I go to yoga classes, all those things that I need to do, but also making sure I honor and respect them as well.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like, do you mind if I ask, I hadn't checked with you if you're like, how long you've been in your current relationship for, or if you're married or not, or?
My relationship, my partner and I have been together for 3.5 years, but okay. We knew each other for about 10 years before we got together.
I see, okay.
So we were friends first, and I love him, so I'm very lucky. I get to be with my best friend.
Perfect, yeah, it's one of the ideals with it. Just the notion of when you're talking about the different things you're working on in a relationship on an ongoing basis of, it kind of reminded me of, in some ways, the way I'd describe our relationship.
Like we've been together for 20 years.
Yeah, actually 23, actually.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But I was going to say, one of the things that's made it work for us is kind of like a little bit what you were describing in your relationship, the idea of just this notion of you got to keep re-earning it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like not feeling like, almost like, you know, when you start a job and you're kind of...
on your best behavior.
Yeah, or you say you're in that probationary period. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a job that, it can be a job that's unionized, but initially when you first start out, you're not, nothing's guaranteed. You got to get through this many days, et cetera, or you got a practicum or something like that. You're so conscious about, respectful about, this is important to me. I want this job to work out. I want this practicum to work out. And you're giving it this great effort, and you're not taking it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways that humility of is such a key attribute that helps people to keep basically earning that relationship and earning that this isn't guaranteed for life. I got to keep earning it, or I got to keep growing, or I got to keep, you know, working on my own weakness areas or whatever, or areas where, you know, I need to stretch myself a bit to be more supportive.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I can see that if you think of a relationship almost like a garden where it's not like you plant the flowers and they're going to keep growing every year, even if they're annuals, and you hope that they will. You still need to make sure that you're nurturing, whether or not adding fertilizer to the soil, making sure it gets enough water, some sunlight, and just love.
Yeah, it's a good ecological metaphor for it, in the sense that we come from this earth too, and we are, you know, mostly water, and we're you know, we may have that bonus consciousness, but we're as organic as you get, and not just our biology, but particularly in terms of our relationships, the emotions in our psyche and our heart. It's those gardens we have to keep working on, and it's kind of actually it's one that I don't know. It'd be something potentially for exploring for listeners, etc. The notion of like we've been actually common law, and part of it was actually that idea of re-earning stuff, or kind of like that sense you're on probation. Part of the reason why we chose that path, even though we're all for the different ideals and virtues that go with marriage, of commitment and fidelity and. You know, working through the hard times and things like that, or when your stuff comes up and you see the honeymoon phase passes, all for those different dimensions that go with the marriage. But in some twisted way, maybe because you know, our own experience, my partner's parents had, her parents had divorced, and my parents, was a little part of me when I was a teenager, I was thinking, or adolescent, I was thinking, you guys don't look very happy. I was wanting to almost sit them down and say, you don't have to stay together for us. Something, what I meant was our caution about, since we didn't see a lot of aunts and uncles or others extra, still seeming like they're really, you know what I mean, in love or re-nurturing it, like that long-term couple you described.
Mm.
We almost thought we had a better chance at a long-term relationship if we didn't get married, if we had to keep, almost like being on probation rather than feeling like you somehow have got tenure or something like that. At a job, so that was kind of our take. So all for the commitment of stuff that goes with marriage, but trying to do it in a different way that and in some ways, it's been, we've had to keep doing that in our kind of our unmarriage marriage.
But I think that's a perfect example of conscious monogamy, where it's like what works for the two of you may not work for everybody, but the fact that you guys have been together for 23 years is huge, especially in this day and age. And so that works, and it's a beautiful example of that working. So.
Yeah, thanks. It's an interesting thing. I don't know if you'd want, if you're interested in the idea of that. I think I mentioned the idea of in terms of doing some of that customizing or
Yes, you mentioned there's about six different, like in terms of non-sexual polyamory as well.
And the idea of scaling,
yes,
almost like scaling your attractions or scaling your interests of not just attractions of people. You could also use it for any type of growth you're wanting to bring into the relationship. For your passions, it could be, honey, I think I want to go. The idea is that this is something you use it generally in counseling situations where people can manage any growth steps they're wanting to do in life. Often where we get stuck at is people want to make this some big step, and they're stuck and blocked at it, and there's a way you can scale it down. Well, if that's maybe like an 8 out of 10 on your scale of how challenging of a thing,
mm-hmm.
Well, how can we get you doing something that's more like a 2 out of 10?
So like baby steps, so like doing the gross grind where the best analogy I got the first time I did it, it took me 3.5 hours. Granted, I did go on a date and was wearing heels and it was snowing about halfway through, but with that, it took me a lot longer. And I finally had a partner that helped me with it because I was absolutely petrified and wanted to conquer the mountain.
Yeah.
So what he recommended was just look at just baby steps, look at the next one or two steps that are coming up. So same thing, I guess, if you're making a big incremental change, don't try and tackle the mountain all in one day. Take one or two steps, baby steps.
Yeah, break it down into
into sizable chunks that are easier.
Sizable chunks, and another way you can, kind of what I do, I've done, whether it's either with clients or even talking with friends or even in my own relationship, you do the scaling thing. If you did it, say, from a scale of 1 to 10, 1 would be the most minor step it may be, in a growth step, or if you're doing on a, one could just be growth steps in life. One could be, you could call it career growth or other personal growth steps in life. It could be about one of you may have a desire to move to a different part of the world or something like that, and you may decide, well, that's too big of a stretch right now, but I consider that a few years from now when I've got, you know, my other work more established or something like that. So that idea of the scaling, you can also apply that to another category you'd apply, would just be attractions to others and or your social connections.
And I think that's huge too, because it's one of the things we don't think about, the fact that we are going to still be attracted to other people. We just think, I shouldn't say we just, a lot of people, it's that misconception that once you find the one or the partner that you want to work with to have a life together, that you won't be attracted to other people, and it's such a misconception.
You know, in a sense, I think it's so much of it is underground. I don't know if you... have you ever touched on the book? I know your friend in the past, or co-friend, Julia Saunders, has mentioned the book Mating Captivity.
Yes, by Esther...
Carell?
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm cheating. I'm looking at it right in front of me here. I hope that's how you pronounce the last name. She's got a wonderful what I meant is, so much of that stuff gets shoved down because we haven't been modeled it. It's risky. So, if 90 or whatever the percentage is, 90, 95% of the population out there publicly identifies as monogamous, even if they're privately maybe doing a certain chunk of them are maybe doing monogamish type activities, or they have varying degrees of openness, they're just not public about it. So what it means is, if people identify as monogamous, what the first thing that means is, okay, well, it's risky. I'm not going to be out there about my attractions to other people, or other, whether it's fantasies or just general energies. Like you get a wonderful little mini crushes you may have on, and I'm talking innocent crushes. I'm not talking about, you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. I have my charity crush on Craig Kielbaum, who runs Free the Children.
Okay,
I think it's pretty cool. And I had a crush on Terry Fox as a kid.
Yeah. It can be celebrity crushes, too. If anything, actually, I didn't mean to minimize it either.
No.
Crushes can be threatening things. When I think of it over the years, I'm thinking, well, if I go way back, I'm like, oh, I can think of the odd one. We're like, oh, God, this is scary. I'm really drawn to this person. They could be the lighter end, like you said, celebrities, etc. Someone who's like, okay, well, they're not exactly, George Clooney or whoever isn't exactly available. So you can crush away safely in your relationship. But for the other ones, there can be these, I just mean in general, like the way we're drawn to people, right up to if you were more romantically defined it as a crush. These are like incredible energies you can get from other people in life. But the key is learning to have the kind of the steadying skills, or the learn to get the finesse and the stability skills, to know that, hey, I'm not going to be leaving my partner just because I'm drawn to some other person, or I might occasionally fantasize about, for classic example, your fitness or yoga instructor or something. It can be innocently done. You can go to your class and you may have a particular personality or two you enjoy more in different ways, and it's just like, in some ways, what it's talking about is dozens and dozens of types of beauty, and I don't just mean physical beauty. It might be just someone's voice or their accent or their, you know what I mean, certain poetry they bring into their class, and you're just so admiring of that. Hell, it could just be, you know, you could be at a simple coffee shop or something, and there's some musicians playing every Monday night or something, and you're so enthralled by the beauty of what they're singing. It doesn't mean you're wanting to run off and have an affair with all these people, but you're filling up your different types of love tanks.
I like that. Different types of love tanks.
So that's that's one of the ideas of when you start making it conscious. Anyways, going back to Esther, she's got one chapter just to start to uncover that idea, and it's called, I'll look at table of contents here. I think it's called The Third in the Relationship. The book, actually, again, is Mating in Captivity. It's a wonderful book for anyone interested in having some good foundations for growing a long-term relationship in the modern nature. And the one particular chapter is near the end. Oh, it's called The Shadow of the Third. And the subtitle is called Rethinking Fidelity, and that's where she just basically, just really matter of factly lays it out that it doesn't matter whether you're, how much you think you're a 10 out of 10 and how committed you are to monogamy, and that you will, you know, come death till your part, you're not going to break any the vows you make. She says the basic facts are, and all the science supports it on from various faculties, you're going to be attracted to people for the rest of your life. The question then is, how open do you want to be about it with your partner? And there's no, this is a very, that's a very open-ended way of, in the sense that people can do it to varying degrees. But it's from there you decide, how do you want to manage it? How open do you want to be about it in different ways? And you can take, ideally, you take baby steps. You don't just start sharing everything in one go. But there's also, it's an open-ended conversation of, there are dozens and dozens of ways of how you can manage those attractions. But of course, the probably the most challenging one for a relationship would be doing the classic thing that you may have got a sense of maybe your grandparents or so from these eras in Western culture would have done, where maybe they really never talked about anything to do with other attraction to other people, or much at all, at least from what you kind of would see on the surface. That would be the one end of the scale, would be almost sharing none of it, to moving all the way along a scale of deciding, hey, we're going to progressively share more dimensions of how we're drawn to other people, but how can we manage that and fit that into our life that feels comfortable and not threatening?
Mm-hmm. So what's a good way to start those conversations, especially it's the beginning of the relationship, and even setting up a framework where creating safety for that discussion?
One would probably get a sense of your, probably, first kind of do a check-in to see how jealous do each of you run, and how have things gone in the past, both in terms of past relationships. It's good. It's really good to know. We've all had our little, our rupture points, or those ways things have gone not well
mm-hmm.
in a relationship. And sometimes it can. I see it a lot of times in people I see in friends or in couples that something really shitty happened where the most classic one is someone's trust was really broken.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a classic affair or some other dimension of it, someone's trust was broken, and they just so are vigilant, they don't want to go back and have that repeated. And so sometimes there's a lot of barriers put up about trying to not have that repeated. But I guess in a sense, if you know where each person's a little bit of this kind of the bumps or bruises they've had emotionally in past relationships, you can maybe tread more sensitively with each other about that thing. Such as if someone ended up losing a lover that they their best friend, they dumped them and started dating their best friend or something like that. Probably that would be the type of partner that you probably wouldn't want to, that would be higher on the scale of sharing how attracted you are to some of your partner's friends. Does that make sense?
That does.
Yeah, and that would be a classic one anyways, too, whether that's happened or not. The less threatening the people are in society, you could start with the less threatening things. Basically, if you've when you ski, you have those kind of like three, ski or snowboard, the three types of runs. I assume there are. I'm showing my age here at Everett. I haven't done the boarding, but how you have kind of like the green diamond, the blue diamond, and I think it's the black, whatever, or green runs, the blue runs, or is intermediate. Green's the beginner, easy stuff, and then it's the black ones for the advanced.
Okay.
You can use that same level of stuff in terms of those attractions, as far as start with which ones you just intuitively know are lighter things to share, such as the green ones, the more beginner. If you did this on a scale, you'd have it 1, 2, 3 would be, and this is actually could be a useful scale for the listeners as well. If you'd basically take a regular sheet of paper, hold it not face up the tall way, but instead the wide way, just do a line straight down across the middle of the page, and you've got a 1, and in for doing the scale, you've got, it'll be 1 to 10 along that scale. And then you can have a number of lines below for each category. One category could be just your attractions to, say, for the one we're on right now, the attractions to other people, and types of connections you may want to have with other people, social connections or heart, any type of heart center connection, not just sexual ones. 1, 2, and 3 would be the green type of, fairly, almost like green, like a green light too, would be a good metaphor for it. These ones are pretty tame. You're pretty confident that you can manage this stuff, and your partner's pretty comfortable and confident that you can manage those attractions. 4, 5, and 6 down the middle would be that more like what you call on a ski run, the intermediate or a blue one, or if you prefer, you could use the color of like a intersection, the yellow light, like it, meaning there's proceed with some caution, but there's it's still manageable stuff. These are intermediate level stuff, 4, 5, and 6. And then the upper end would be 7, 8, 9, which using the ski analogy, you'd use black. I'd actually recommend instead use the color red, meaning it can refer to two things. One, like a red light potentially if it's a monogamous relationship, this would be red light, like stop. These are the areas that maybe you can explore mentally in terms of fantasies, etc. But these are the definite ones where your typical, say, monogamous couple would be, say, no, we're not going there. It's stuff to do with, classic traditional sexual stuff, whether it's necking or involving the genitals. So that would be 7, 8, 9. And then there's a number 10 category that's completely separate from all this, is the idea of even if you're in an open relationship to varying degrees, these are some levels of attractions to other people or levels of types of connections you may think about doing that as you move on the scale, it's greater degrees of intimacy or greater degrees of risk. The 10 out of 10 level would be stuff you're never going to do, that no one's going to do, even the most boldest people in open poly or swinging type relationships. But it's good to name them. I mean, you can have these fantasies, but you know you're not going to do them because they're just too big for consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense for those three? The green, the middle
black
ground?
And the... Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I think that's really key.
And what you can do with time, you start cheaping with, say, on the low-end stuff. You might talk about, perfect example would be, instead of talking with, like, friends and stuff would be on the higher scale stuff, people really close to you that could be threatening. You can start with different movies you watch and you know, it could be some romantic or erotic type movie or whatever, mentioning some different actors or actresses that, you know, you could sit down and you do a typical that romantic movie and you watch it and both of you aren't sitting there almost no couples are superimposing their spouse into those couple roles. They're enjoying the richness of seeing these two other lovers and whether it's a romance, whatever the romance story is, whether it's a romantic comedy or some more, intense drama.
Mm-hmm.
You're enjoying it, but you could actually start to share what is it you like about that character. You could talk about it after the show. And you could both talk about those things, but you could also be open about, hey, this is a safe space to share any jealousies that come up.
Mm-hmm.
Like any little bumps where all of a sudden you feel like, oh, something comes up. This is a place you can explore it a bit because you're starting on the lighter end or the medium end. You're not jumping in with the full-on stuff of like, you have no idea the hots I have for your sister or something like that,
Very much so.
Or your best friend, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Which is going to be maximum threatening and also maximum, what do you mean? You like my sister more than me or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Even to the point of on that scale, to normalize for a good example for that, some of those things you may never share with your partner. If your intuitive sense of it, this is too much information or this
yes.
is going to be based on their sense of jealousy, etc.
Yes. And I'm sorry I started laughing there very profusely. I have a friend who I won't mention names, but actually divorced her husband 3 months into their marriage. She wanted to open up their relationship and wanted to sleep with two of her cousins and her two sisters.
Okay.
Yeah, she did not take that very well.
yeah, that's a big...
And wouldn't let up on it after she said no.
Interesting. Yeah, that can be a big, that's probably a great example of when you talk about on the sexual scale there.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing to example that first line of what we were talking about when I said monogamous would probably exclude most of the things on the red level, the sexual end of things.
Mm.
That's in terms of in general attractions to others, actually physically having those experiences. As opposed to in terms of things like role play or just describing fantasies and stuff like that of other things they've wanted to do at some point, those elements could still be brought into the relationship where you're still keeping the sexuality between the two of them. And as well as on that's for attractions to others. That same thing of doing that scale, if you actually did a different line from the green, the blue, and then the red of actual sexual behaviors, you could do the scale for that too. And some, it would be a way that you could similarly explore monogamous couples of, well, what are we doing right now? What are things we might consider would be some possible steps? And what are some of the more freaky or kinky type things we might want to do down the road? Unfortunately, that marriage example, it sounds like someone led with something that was much, you know what I mean, like quite high on the, you know.
The black diamond?
Yeah, or close to that. And, you know, when you're talking about, what did you say it was involving two cousins and?
Two cousins and two sisters.
Like the sisters of?
Of his bride.
The sisters of the bride. Yeah, so you got the two classic things of siblings and cousins. Yeah, so that's on the upper end of it, yeah. Some may put that in the 9 category or somewhere between 9 and the 10 of the no-go. But it's such a shame because, you know, if maybe that exact fantasy would never have been really realized, but if they had started with some of the more manageable ones and they could earn the trust in a relationship, maybe they could have gotten up to, 8.5 or 9 on a scale of a bunch of other different things, if they over a number of years built that trust up. But look, honey, I said I just wanted to do this. I wanted whatever it may be, and you trusted me with that, and I'm following through, and you continually build that trust up. Does that make sense in terms of what I'm talking about, in terms of the trust building?
That makes sense.
Have you ever heard of the tree analogy? Actually, I wanted to ask you about that, which kind of goes right in with a scale of if you consider yourself, your relationship, like a tree. This is one of the things that goes with this. You know, before I talked about the balancing the those two dimensions of a relationship, the growing end and the stability, safety end.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of yourself is like a tree, and you could almost, like, if you held your hand, your arm up in front of you, you could almost get half the visual right there. The forearm would be like the trunk of your, of who you are as a person. All your fingers are just even looking out the window or something at a tree. All the branches are like all your social, all the different social connections you have, all the basically extroverted ways you reach out to feed from things, whether it's other people, from, you know, cuddling with your dog, your cat, or the different bonds you have with nature, all the different ways you feed from this ecosystem in extroverted ways, and primarily socially with other people. Those are all those branches. Any tree, when you look at a tree, if you look at a tree, a classic tree as a, using that metaphor, as it grows in life, your typical tree, what does it grow? You know, a small typical tree in the city, or maybe if it grows, just for example, 6 to 12 inches or something like that a year, that's how much the branches grow. Well, in a commensurate amount way, the roots have to grow a proportional equal amount of distance to support those branches growing. And if you start a relationship up, regardless of how long the courtship is, whether someone gets married or not, when you first start dating, you're basically like, in a sense, you're kind of like, you're both individuals, you're both, using the analogy, you're two trees kind of like side by side where you have some branches overlapping as you start dating and meeting each other. You have to do it in a pacing way to recognize, hey, if we want to do these growing steps in our relationship with new branches growing, we have to equally focus on those roots, those different virtues of manageable steps and growing the roots to prove we can support these new steps.
That makes perfect sense. Because if you don't have that support, it's going to just topple right over.
Yeah. Particularly if you, I don't know if you've ever, either from personal experiences or from friends or other guests calling in, seen something where someone's added on a really, like a really much more of a threatening branch. It's kind of like shooting off in another direction. Like the more the branch is some new growth dimension someone's wanting to add, the more it's a challenge to the relationship. Like you need to be growing the branches. This is the key. If you don't continually have new shoots, the relationship's going to slowly just get more and more duller, and it's got the bigger death of just boredom and like, oh, what happened to us? So you need to be growing those branches. It's just recognizing however big a growth step you're considering for these branches, you have to be tuned into what kind of, where are the roots at, or what steps are you taking to make sure the roots are growing in a commensurate way.
No, that makes sense. For example, there's a lot of couples, especially with the recession right now, that are challenged because, and that was one of the things you brought up towards the beginning of the show, about moving. That's a really big one.
Yeah. Like with jobs and considering, where do we need to go to school
and
or career,
For right now, I think, because a lot of people, more people have gone back to school than at any other time.
Yeah.
Just because things keep growing. And people are needing to shift just because the economy's evolved so much. And to be employed, different skill sets. And with that, it sounds like there's some noise in the background. But in regards to that, people are trying to evolve, and sometimes that can be challenging. And more couples are talking about just changing their relationship style, because perhaps one may need to leave the province or, you know, move elsewhere to actually find employment, so that one of them can grow.
Yeah. Perfect example. When you say change the style, what would be a way of you're thinking they may have to change it up in addition to support, say, someone having to, is this like, say, supporting having a long distance relationship, or
perhaps having a long distance relationship? For example, I know quite a few men just where the film industry's evolved quite a bit. I used to be quite involved myself in the industry, and I've got a lot of friends with, say, BC Film that have not had a lot of employment in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And with that, are looking at, say, different things like construction, etc., if they're carpenters on set, other things, art department, and are looking at perhaps going to camp for some of the different mining, etc., and where they would be away, say, for example, 5 weeks on, 10 days off kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is going to change the relationship greatly on so many different levels if one partner has moved over to camp.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's actually a perfect example. I know sometimes Savage Love...
Dan Savage has got great stuff.
Yeah. He's been a little guru for myself as well over the years, his writing. He would kind of touch on it in a way, too. Like, he just made me think of whether someone's all of a sudden at a camp for 6 months or something like that, but they're split up. This is an example of, like, a challenge to the sexual end of things in a relationship. He would give examples of that, or even sometimes where someone could have some major injury or some major health thing where their libido has just plummeted to almost nothing.
Yes.
And he kind of brings up the idea of even in monogamous relationships, sexual needs are still sexual needs.
Mm-hmm.
No different than, like, food needs or on a certain level. Yes, we can go, when we all prove that, we can go without it, in a sense, but on a core level of feeding yourself and your soul and your psyche, it's right up there with other emotional needs or food needs or water or shelter, etc. I like the way sometimes he'll raise the idea of say someone has this is a good parallel. I mean, to some long distance relationship, for someone has to go away for a year or something or 6 months. If that person's because of a health challenge or something else, their libido's just shot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can they start to creatively talk about this is a challenge to the relationship and it's a challenge to their sex life?
Mm-hmm.
How can one creatively get some of both sexual, we haven't touched on that actually, that could be another topic possibly for another time.
Mm-hmm.
Their sensual and sexual needs, in some ways, their cravings for...
They're craving intimacy.
For intimacy, yeah. And how could they do it? Like, one example that just comes to mind would be something like maybe they've never, either person's ever gone to a simple, like a regular, not even a massage parlor, like for example, just going for a massage. getting a massage where they're doing anything but everything but your genitals. And some you can find more holistic ones that are much more heart centered. They're, you know, like they're treating you with in wonderful, caring, touching ways every other part of your body, but they're also bringing some really good heart energies. That would be an example of other ways they come up with creative ways. What can we do in terms of whether it's, you know, maybe expanding their self-pleasuring or you know, it could be phone sex. It could be...
There's phone sex. There's self-pleasure. I think the big thing is to communicate, even if it feels like it's the white elephant in the room, whether or not it's because hormonal changes, just changing a change of life for women or men, if somebody's developed a disability or an illness such as cancer.
Yeah.
I'm thinking prostate cancer in particular as men are getting older. And even with women, if breast cancer, etc., where there's the self-esteem piece that's attached as well.
Yeah.
I'd say probably the, and I'm not a sex expert myself, but again, just coming up with different ways to let the partner know that you love them. One of my favorite books I love, and he's one of my dream guests that I want to meet at some point. I have a book crush on him.
Is
Dr. Gary Chapman.
Okay. What was it again? Gary?
Gary Chapman, who wrote the book Five Love Languages.
Okay.
And making sure as your partner evolved, even if they're dealing with depression because of the changes and being a little bit freaked out, making it not all about sex, where it's about the connection. So there's not the pressure for having the big O, where it's focused on the practice, making sure you're breathing together, even if it's just tickling, hugging, holding each other, the cuddling, those types of things. If there's those pieces to it, if it's physically not possible because of an injury, but even if someone was in a coma, being able to hold them and touch them, even if it was an injury because of, say, sexual abuse or violence that happened outside of the home. It's important as well. As an example, I know of several people just from the work I do in the downtown east side who have dealt with sexual violence and having to heal when they come back into the home front. And I know the first time I heard it, I was surprised, but sometimes one of the things that a partner can do is not only create that safe space, but letting that person know that they still find them really attractive, but it's just not putting the pressure on for sex, and but creating that lovely space so that they know that even though they may feel dirty or stigmatized in some way, that their partner still loves them and doesn't feel that they're dirty and not worthy of having sex.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad you brought some of those examples up. And in some ways, one of the silver linings for some of these different challenges that you mentioned is that our culture is so
sexualized.
Well, sexualized, like on the brain, is sex obsessed in the sense of it's in, you know, advertising continually, even on so many mainstream companies and whatnot about, you know, our customers are getting it. Are you, you know, etc. That automatically when we think of connecting or intimacy, other than, you know, a hug or, you know, a heart-to-heart talk, that's all most people go right to thinking about. And it's sometimes some of those different challenges from whether it's a traumatic experience or a medical challenge or something like that, it can help people when you talked about some of the common themes of going slowly with stuff and not right into the sexual realm. It can help people discover... kind of like which we haven't quite touched on yet tonight, on that scale of when I was talking about the green and the blue areas, these are like what we call the non-sexual areas of like the non-sexual polyamorous, or when I say poly, I mean just whether it's your partner or other loving connections we're still craving with people, whether it's hugging your child or your pet or your parent, or, you know, hugging a tree, or, you know, dipping your feet in the ocean and having that incredible intimate connection with the water or other things of nature. There are all these incredible, sensual, sacred, intimate types of connections that we're craving. They all feed us, and from it doesn't matter whether it's a one or a six or anywhere in between. It just means there are varying levels of risk. You know, hugging your pet or your child or something like that. That would be an example of a one. it's incredibly sweet. You're just in this symbiotic state. You're not thinking of anything to do with sexuality, but you're just in this deep state of oneness. But there's no threat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Versus the 10 level, it could be the wildest fantasy in the world, but you're probably going to be, you know, arrested or half a dozen STDs and you know, shamed out of your town or something. Type of thing. Meaning, it can be wonderful avenues for people discovering what the true range of their, almost like their appetite. We're so stuck on the red zone of thinking, that's what I want, the more is better, the hyped up, the hotter, the risk, whatever you want to call it.
Well, kicking up the dopamine levels in the brain.
Yeah, and we're...
Where it's almost like going, in terms of the addiction, it always reminds me of chasing the dragon, where it's this fantasy, where the fantasy is never quite what reality is, if that makes sense, where it's never going to be quite as good as.
Yeah, you mean the chasing, like, the I want this, I want that, and
yes.
It never quite matches or whatever?
That's correct.
Well, part of it is because of it's a little bit in the way, sometimes when you're in the land of sexuality, you're a little bit in the land of ego, and this is just even, it could be amongst partners or other people. What I found is incredible, I've noticed in my work, whether it's the body work with clients, counseling or friends or dozens of different types of experiential activities I've gone to that are on the 1 to 6 scale, which I'm defining as non-sexual polyamory, I'm just blown away by how much people are being fed by it because they're able to check their ego at the door. It's not this big performance thing that seeps into our head of us, even us, we can get caught up. It can be sometimes the sex end of it can become more of a well, just all these pressures and all these things are ego things. Oh, I want to be a good lover, and what are all these things that lovers are doing out there in the world? Okay, well, how long did we go? How many positions did we do? You know what I mean?
Well, it's about sex. It's big. It's more than just about genital friction, and I think sometimes we forget that.
Yeah.
And one of the things I do want to plug before we wrap the show well is you're going to be doing a workshop. I believe it's this weekend, isn't it, for the...
The living wellness. Actually, speaking of that, we're a good example of it. Where we're I'm going to be touching on different dimensions of kind of like that 1 to 6 scale of another term for it is like all these different ways you can tap into oxytocin, that incredible calming, connecting brain drug that's released with our endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
All different ways you can make those incredible connections, and there's probably about a dozen other workshop facilitators that are coming for this great retreat. It's actually communitycatalyst.ca, and they're planning to do three, or they've done one in the spring. They're doing it this one this weekend. So,
and I believe the next one's in October, but it's exciting. You get to go this weekend. It's just off the Sunshine Coast, I believe.
Yeah. It's actually a perfect example. Like, there's no... Almost all the workshops are all these incredible connections you can have with other people, different ways, whether it's like, this is what I mean for like, when you talk about non-sexual polyamory, or I'm meaning basically that applies to people whether you're monogamous or not.
Mm-hmm.
Just all sorts of other incredible, profound, sacred connections and community connections you can have with other people, whether it's singing, dancing, doing, you know, playing like activities and stuff, getting back to your kid. It could be laughter, yoga. Some of the things I'm going to be sampling in mind would be, you know, for a quick summary or whatever, it could be anything from partner yoga, acro yoga, which is like supporting someone in the air, and you've got the intimacy of trusting each other to support each other, and you can be doing a little bit of yoga Thai massage moves while you're being supported in the air, massaging them a bit. Things like contact improv, or the full name is contact improvisational dance.
I love that.
Where, again, you're basically doing, you're making up moves. For new listeners curious about the term, you're making up all sorts of different moves with your body, but you're doing it in not, unless it's a particularly unique context you're meeting at. It's generally, it's basically all sorts of moves you do, and you do anything but poke each other's eye out or any classic makeup moves at the bar. So it's basically kind of taking the overt sexuality of the thing out of it. Okay, they're not going to be doing any, you know, making a pass at me, and suddenly you're getting back to this incredible creative zone of play and of trusting again in each other to come up with all sorts of neat, playful, symbiotic connections. And it'll be, again, all sorts of other things like that of wellness. Mm-hmm. topics at the retreat, both this weekend as well as the next great one they're having in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And very affordably, too, actually, like just for a fraction of the cost of what you pay for something like Hollyhock.
Which I think is fantastic. So that's communitycatalyst.ca.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I know you've got some stuff coming up, which I'm looking forward to having you back on the show in the fall, which I think will be very fun.
Yeah, that would be great, yeah.
And as well, I just want to, before we wrap the show, just also thank you so much for being on. And I had one last thought, which is my favorite. I honestly think they were onto something back in the 1950s.
Yeah.
It went around the internet years ago, which was quite entertaining, where it was the... I think it was from a home economics textbook where the woman was supposed to come to the door and greet the man at the door with a glass of wine and give him a kiss and make sure the children were playing quietly.
Okay.
I think there's some value to that. I really do. And maybe call me old fashioned. I'm probably going to get lots of calls with people hating.
Yeah, yeah.
But regardless whether you're a man or woman, I think it's really important when your partner comes home, if it's humanly possible, to run and greet them. Just give them a big hug. It doesn't have to be a big kiss or anything, but just take that moment to give them a really good hug where you've got your arms wrapped around them and just hold them for a moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just so that they're recognized. And I've always questioned that whenever I've listened to friends laugh about it, and it's just like, okay, it's actually not that funny. I think it would be really nice to be met at the door that way.
And absolutely. Those they talk about, they break it down into a lot of, John Gottman, he's one of the major relationship experts. They study relationships on couples, and they've had them in the lab for a while, and they can get right down to cues, thinking which ones are going to last and which ones are probably going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a whole bunch of examples of exactly what you said. So a bunch of what you call these emotional bids, like how many little micro positive bids are you putting out towards each other, and how many negative or more blocking, kind of like antagonistic or critical or bids are you sending to each other? And they study it, and it's those little micro steps of even things like the quality of, and that doesn't mean have to be some grand perfect greeting, but just actually greeting each other, whether it's the hug, the kiss, just how are you, just on a basic level, at least, before it's right into task mode of oh shit, I forgot to get this for dinner, or you know what I mean? Or
mm-hmm.
Those things really do feed relationships.
It really does.
Yeah.
James?
I can give you one quick title called Love 2.0 that touches right into that very thing as well. It's a more recent book that is touching on all those types of bids. And kind of like they don't use the term so much, non-sexual polyamory, but that's basically what they're talking about. The hundreds and hundreds of ways we're craving positive heart connections.
Mm-hmm.
All day long. Whether it's a simple chuckle you have with the cashier to a smile you have, with a neighbor or someone else, some stranger passing by or something. They actually feed us on.
No, it nourishes us. As you put it so aptly earlier, it fills up the love tank, which I think is so apt. James, thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to have you on again because we've got lots of wonderful stuff. But
perfect.
For listeners out there, you're welcome. It's communitycatalyst.ca for the workshop this weekend, and there'll be another one in the fall. Up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a beautifully sexy man to be miserable with. It's kind of nice. I got to chat for an hour with a lovely sexy man. I have a lovely sexy man standing behind me who has great shoes, who's going to be playing some pretty awesome music. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a beautiful night, everyone. Love, joy, and kiss. Mwah!